All right, y'all, it's spring, and you know what that means. It's time to start planning our summer festival traveling. Yep, it's time to get into my Airbnb bag cross-country, a.k.a. Time to visit my homes all across the country. And you know what I never think about? Why not list my own spot on Airbnb and host some folks at my house? I mean, my house is cute. Yes, let's make money while we're spending money. Just trying to help you out, man, because your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome to 500 Greatest Songs, a podcast based on Rolling Stone's hugely popular, influential, and sometimes controversial list. I'm Brittany Spanos.
And I'm Rob Sheffield. We're here to shed light on the greatest songs ever made and discover what makes them so great.
From classics like Fleetwood Mac's Dreams to the Ronettes' Be My Baby, and modern day classics like The Killers' Mr. Brightside.
Listen to Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, acclaimed comics writer and notorious Scott Summers hater, Rosie Knight.
Well, hello, Emmy-winning podcaster and totally unbiased Targaryen royal supporter, Jason Concepcion.
Somehow the X-Ray Vision podcast has returned.
And like always, we'll be here every week.
You'll hear from TV writers, actors, comics creators, pop culture critics.
Nothing is off the table.
Listen to X-Ray Vision on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We are back with part two of our conversation with Funky George Brown of Kool & the Gang. I love this conversation for several reasons. Get Down On It is my absolute favorite song of all time, and Celebration was played at my bar mitzvah, of course. If you haven't yet, please listen to part one with George, where he speaks about growing up in Jersey City and how that toughened him, the band's early success, and his skills as a drummer. George just penned a memoir, Kool & the Gang & Me, which is available right now. George, Kool, and the rest of the band also just released a new album, People Just Want to Have Fun. Make sure you check that out. But first, part two of QLS with Funky George Brown.
I'm assuming during this period that you guys don't have day jobs as well. Like, we did an episode with Millie Jackson, only to find out that she was basically Millie Jackson on the weekends.
Right.
And then Monday through Thursday, she'd go back to her day job. Where she was working in Manhattan.
Or something. Yeah, she was at an office.
Yeah. Well, yeah, she was working in the garment district of Manhattan. Right. While she was, you know, doing Live and Bitchy, like at the peak of it. Is one able to make a comfortable living, especially in an 8-man group, which I assume is different than the setup with Earth, Wind & Fire, in which, you know, which is basically the Maurice White group, and he's paying them as,
yeah,
you know, work for hire, you know, or contracted work for hire. But
understood, yeah.
Like in okay, so say it's 76, like right before you guys do after Jungle Boogie, and right before Open Sesame comes into play.
We were very lucky. There were no day jobs. In the initial period, you say 1969, mm-hmm. Then I think at that point, Cletus Smith had a job delivering. But after we signed the contract with Delight, we worked. We've always worked. We've always had a gig.
You so, never had a regular job, huh, George?
The regular jobs were when we were doing... And still, we're doing the nightclubs. But still, no one was hitting the punching the time clock mm-hmm. like that. It wasn't like that. It just changed. Because that first record, Kool & the Gang by Kool & the Gang, number 38 with a bullet on top 100. Mm. That the record changed the whole atmosphere. Most black artists got to go over the black chart or this chart. That record went pop with a bullet.
So you guys had a fair deal then?
Yeah, we got a fair deal then. Mm-hmm. And we got a blessing because not many black acts just popped up number 38 with a bullet or the top right. 100. So we were working. So there was work. It might have been slow here and there, but we did work.
So if I want to ask you about publishing, because I'm curious where you got your publishing education, because we talk about hip hop, but if your publishing wasn't right from the start, it wouldn't even matter because you wouldn't have been receiving, you know, the profits of your work.
The BMI, ASCAP, CSAC, and all of our, from Warner Chappell and BMG and all that. Well, early on, like with Gene Red, again, he was a guy, he told us all about that, you know, and so... Therefore, we were receiving, I mean, I signed with BMI when I was 19, right? And that's because of Gene Red. All of us had, you know, and earning from first Delight. But then when PolyGram bought Delight, then the royalties for writing and publishing came from PolyGram and Warner Chappell. And BMI, sorry. And then the artist royalties also came out of PolyGram. So we knew.
One of the most pivotal, crucial moves that you guys did was adding JT Taylor. But there's actually a second factor that not many people talk about. You guys went with a very unorthodox direction associated with legendary Brazilian producer Amir Deodato.
Right before we started, he called me twice. Right before we started it. Really? I looked up and said, Dio. I said, I was talking. Because, you know, when you talk to Dio, you got to bring a lunch.
Okay.
Yeah.
I want to know, what was the meeting or the decision process? One, to bring in a lead singer. And two, to work with not only an outside producer, but a Brazilian producer, which, I mean, I would imagine in 1979, one would figure that, you know, I got to go to the top of the pile, like either get with Gamble and Huff or, you know, Norman Harris. I knew it was Norman.
Norman Harris, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So what made you guys go with Amir Deodato? Of all things, not really known for a pop sense, or, I mean, you know, he dabbled in disco, but not enough for me to be like, okay, this is our do or die moment. Let's get with him.
Well, Dio at 17 years old was like the number one arranger and producer in all of Brazil. And he had written strings for Carlos Jobim, you know, most of our heads were in that. You know, that thing. He wrote for Carlos Jobim. Woo. So our heads were still in that jazz. Irene Conrad over at House of Music, she introduced, I think I got the story right. There might be some loose ends. Khalees to James J.T. Taylor. I think Ron Sweeney had said it. It's time to bring in a lead singer. You guys can do it. We looked at Stevie because we did a lot of work with Stevie. Well, Stevie helped us out so many times when the bus would break down.
Really?
We'd call Stevie and he'd help us out. Really? Yeah. So Steve would help us out numerous times. And we wanted him to come in and produce. Yeah, he said, sorry, fellas, I got to get my own album happening at that time. So we had a manager, Val Hackett. Val shopped, and I call it shopping, but he got Amir Deodato, which was a great blessing. It meshed just like dovetail, like, man, the beauty is just connected. He was the right guy for Kool & the Gang because all the music the guys knew, we were all musicians. Mm-hmm. Guys who knew all the chord changes and, you know, what have you, all the scales, and sit down and actually write it out. With him, it was easy. If we were shopping, he would write that down. And weeks later, when the horns would come in, he said, somebody was shopping, which is a simple line, right? And but guys would write those parts down as well. You know, Clifford Adams, who played trombone, we have a trombone case full of music. Dio was the right choice And not only the right choice for the music, but the right choice in really organizing the band and how we did things. He brought it to a whole other level, making sure that everything was notated, everything was written down.
As a drummer, I always wanted to know, how hard was it to sort of adjust your sound for the times? Because even I noticed, me as a drummer, I've pretty much stayed kind of consistent for my 30 years of drumming in the roots and on record. Like, I've not, I mean, if I change my sounds for experimental purposes, but not like, hey, let me adjust to the sound and the climate of where it is today. But like the groove that you're playing on, Let the Music Take Your Mind, is not the same tone or the same sound as Jones versus Jones or Celebration or whatnot. So at the time, how aware are you as the heartbeat of the band that like the most radical sound change of the band has to be with the drums?
It might sound strange because you hear all this from me. It didn't bother me. It was like, let's go with the flow. This is what it is. This is going to help us move forward. This is what's going to bring a wider range of audience. Mm-hmm. So I was totally amenable to it, and actually didn't think about it too much. But Quest, you're right, because later on, because I play piano as well, and okay. I got to a point where, okay, enough of this, and I just switched over to keyboards. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
That's what I was going to ask you about too. That's like a major move that I don't hear about too often.
From drums to keyboards?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, I always played piano.
Okay.
Yeah, it goes back to, we talk about church, it goes back. I've always played.
But in your group, you always played drums until you decided I'm going back to
that. And in writing, when we had our writing session,
How does the songwriting process start? Do you guys just say, hey, I got an idea, guys. What do y'all think about this? Or do you bring it to DT? Do you bring it to Ronald first? Like, how does the songwriting process start?
It was us. We just bring it to us, Guys say whether they like it or not. And if they like it, then we got down on it.
See what you did there.
It's the truth.
Nice.
With Diodato, a little more different because every morning he would pick me up. I lived in Manhattan, then Gramercy Park. And he said, oh, Senor, let me see your homework. So you pop in a cassette, you got your legal pad, you start singing. And he'll either bust your ego then by saying, that's not happening. And or he'd actually, if he felt like it, he'd say, that's very cute, but it's not working.
Wow.
Or he'll say, Senor, you've done it again. Love the lines. And so we would apply, people would have different lines to put in the song and they would work perfectly,
So we shared the story of how Celebration got written, at least Ronald's version of how Celebration got written. But are there any other unusual stories of that for listeners who didn't hear that particular episode? Ronald Bell said that he was backstage at a Rick James and Prince show, and Prince had just did I Want to Be Your Lover. And in between the set changeover from Prince to Rick James, Ronald runs backstage and finds a piano and figures out the chords to I Want to Be Your Lover. And he writes it and notates it down, and then he plays it backwards. And that rhythm of da 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 winds up being da 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 da.
Yeah.
And but I mean, for the songwriting process, especially in the period in which you guys are having unstoppable, pop classics one after the other, are there any other unusual stories of how songs got written?
No, not really. Sometimes guys would pass on a song. I would take it and write a first verse of lyric and give it to JT. He said, this is happening. And the next thing we have a complete song because You got two members working on it. We've got the chord structure figured out, and we're writing the melody and lyric. And bingo, so you got something. And it's the funny thing about it, it went to number five pop, you know, but the, mm-hmm. the band itself didn't like it. That was Take My Heart, you know, and it was very, very poppy, all that. But it's bingo.
You didn't like that song?
No, I helped write it.
I was about to say that was my aunt's song, man.
That was the one I took. I took it because the band didn't like it. Clayton Smith wrote it, the guitar player.
Right. Okay.
But the band didn't like that 12-8.
Right.
So I said, no, give it to me. Took it home. Right. No time for wishing, baby. We've gone all through those moves. I'm all through satisfied. So the next day, of course, get to the studio with Jay. We like, JT, what do you think? He said, man, I like this.
I've been going through a Luther phase in the last like month and a half, reading his book and listening to his music. And I realized that the world is going through a drought of a good shuffle song.
Oh my God.
Like, and Take My Heart is like kind of, I remember when that came out.
Is that shuffle, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yo, what's up? This is Fonsigolo from Team Supreme. Black representation in media is very important to me. I think it's important to have our stories told by people who look like us and who have shared in our common experiences. Some of my earliest influences were Donnie Simpson. I would also say Tom Joyner, Angela Stribling, Sherry Carter. They were just people who told our stories with a lot of class and dignity and were big inspirations to me. The next generation of influential Black voices can be found on NPR's new collection, Black Stories, Black Truths. Black Stories, Black Truths is a celebration of Blackness from NPR. Each of NPR's Black voices are as distinct, varied, and nuanced as the Black experience itself. In the Black Stories, Black Truths collection, you'll hear stories of joy, resilience, empowerment, and creating world-shifting things out of struggle. Every episode is a living account about what it means to be Black today, told from a unique Black perspective. From Bobby Shmurda to The Wire, Michelle Obama to reparations, there's no limit to the range of Black stories, Black truths. Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story. Now, they are the story. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of some of NPR's best podcast episodes celebrating the Black experience. Hear a feed of episodes from across NPR's podcast, The Center Black Voices. It's NPR Noir. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR. Wherever you get podcasts.
All right, y'all. You know what season it is. Tis the season for spring breaking and planning our summer travel. And if you're like me, you're already in your Airbnb app trying to find which spot is right for you. Now, listen, while I'm looking to spend all this money, what I'm not doing is thinking about making money with Airbnb. See, you got to change your mind state. Make the money while you're spending the money. How, you say, Laia, do I make the money? Well, you host at your house. And I know what you're thinking. I mean, my whole house? Well, no, you don't have to do your whole house. I mean, you could do a room or, you know, do the whole house. So make some money while you're spending some money this summer. I'm trying to tell you, your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome to 500 Greatest Songs, a podcast based on Rolling Stone's hugely popular, influential, and sometimes controversial list. I'm Brittany Spanos.
And I'm Rob Sheffield. We're here to shed light on the greatest songs ever made and discover what makes them so great.
Every week, we'll pick a new song from the list and talk about their placement on the revamped 2021 list.
We'll also have guests join us, ranging from the artists themselves to the producers, or simply other writers like ourselves who voted on them.
From classics like Fleetwood Mac's Dreams to the Ronettes' Be My Baby, and modern day classics like The Killers' Mr. Brightside and Britney Spears' Baby One More Time.
There's so many fascinating stories that have been forgotten, like Midnight Train to Georgia starting with a phone call to Farrah Fawcett, or how the Yeah Yeah Yeahs inspired Kelly Clarkson's banger Since You've Been Gone and Beyoncé's Hold Up. Listen to Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Can you talk about the phenomenon that is Celebration? Like, what were the band's general reaction to, like, Celebration winds up being way past an anthem. It's pretty much music DNA. Like it's
with Celebration, we're on the tour bus and leaving LA the night before we won two American Music Awards. Mm-hmm. So the song was germinating then, but that's when you got from Earl Smith, you know. So he said, let's put that in there because
really?
That's very celebratory, you know. So just to put that in the song gives it that boost, you know. But in regards to it becoming...
I mean, to the point where it's like stadiums and weddings and bar mitzvahs. And
weddings and bar mitzvahs, bat mitzvahs, yeah. Backyard barbecues. It's an amazing... It's a blessing. And it is one of those songs that I'm going to say you can't deny and you must play it every evening.
Did it ever become burdensome? Because I know a lot of acts, when they get a mammoth hit of that caliber, then it's like suddenly becomes a burden.
No, you know, what happens, and you know, when you're playing, sometimes you're playing a piece and you played it 1,000 times, but it becomes organic, like, you
right.
know, and guys are playing the right chords, but it's just got this, just tonight, I mean, while you're playing Quest or the piano he's playing, it has another little lilt to it, another little thing to it. And you're playing it, but it has another feel that night. Not, you know, it's not the record feel,
yeah. but
the people feel it. So that's what happens. It turns into this piece of music that, each night you play it, it has a different feeling. And you, when you're singing it as well, it's coming out different, but it's the same thing. There's a party going on right here. But it's coming out different for some reason. And you feel different about it. And when you get off, everybody, great, nice show, man, great show. Nobody feels that, man, it's burning a hole in our shoes.
Right. Well, no one's complaining.
Can I ask about another anthem real quick? I'm curious to how so many fellas come up with another anthem, but this one about the ladies. I don't know if we asked Ronald that question, but I was like, how did you know to embody what a ladies' night was? How does it?
Well, I'll tell you, I could tell who likes to go out and have fun.
Okay.
So he said, you know, the new thing in clubs now on a Friday, Saturday, whatever, it's ladies' night. You know, mm-hmm. and me walking from 57th Street back down to Gramercy, I'm watching how people, the gait of people's walk, just how people walk. And right. Right. I said, right. yeah, I said, man, people are walking like a jazz working bass line. They had that gait. So I went home, sat at the piano and started harmonizing it, and the different key changes, as you know, showed it to Deodato. Hey, this is what we need. So we got together and wrote on it. We had the track already, you know, the horns were playing, what the girls were singing, and JT and myself and Khalees got on the lyrics and done. We're done.
What was it about JT that appealed to the band as far as his voice? I once heard somebody describe that if Nat King Cole had been born 30 years later, like basically it would have been the voice of JT Taylor. Like that's how smooth JT's voice was. Basically, he was like Nat King Cole. Like, but for you, like, what was the appeal to that sort of voice? And were there other acts that or other singers that you guys auditioned before you decided on James JT Taylor?
I don't want to mention people's names like that, but there was some that are well known. But JT did have, and still does, that golden tone in his voice.
Mm-hmm.
Great lyricist, by the way, too. And what we did in the studio is go in and roll a little bit of that on mm-hmm. to his voice, to enhance his voice even more. So, you know, when you're in the studio and say, well, that sounds a little... weak there, or a little mid-rangey, let's work on that. So mm-hmm. we did some work on his voice as well, you know, like everybody does. But he started off with it. He had it.
Okay.
We felt that his voice was pop, pure pop, and it worked at that time. You know, it had a certain innocence in it, non-intimidating, all of that. And just a pop artist. I mean, you know, we could have went for the Teddy Pendergrass, the Luther Vandross. We could have went for it to be part of it, but we felt that it wouldn't work.
And the other singers that you were considering for that spot, was there anyone notable that we would have known that almost had a chance to be in the group?
Yeah.
And you can't name who they are?
No.
It's still a big thing.
I don't want any letters coming to my mailbox.
I mean,
we can pontificate, though. If we pontificate, can you just nod? Like, you know, Howard Hewitt. No, I'm just joking. I'm just the one out.
No.
Ah, damn.
Okay. just like when you mentioned the Vigoritos and, you know, right. Yeah, you leave that alone.
Yeah,
no. Oh, okay.
You're right.
Yeah. I got you. How easy was it for him to adjust to being in the group?
Easy. It was
he the same age as you guys, or was he younger?
A few years younger, just a few. So we're all in the same genre, basically, age-wise. Not too far. I think I'm 4 years older than James.
Okay.
You know, but no, we were the guys who would go to Reese Beach in Brooklyn and throw the frisbee around, have the girlfriends, that type of stuff. We were the guy, we hang out. You know, like where the song comes from. So we were always together in some capacity, even going to the movies.
How are you guys able to maintain any level of, not like a domestic lifestyle, but like, how are you able to balance that, especially like during that time period in which you guys are working class musicians?
That was very hard. During that time period, because when we'd go out for 2 months at a time, we were out with Van Halen, that's 4 months. But the thing is that there's a big tour break, you know, same thing with Kid Rock, you have a tour break. But with us, we go out for 2 months and you're out there. You're not coming back.
Wow. Okay. Especially in the first half of the 80s, in which, you know, those unstoppable hits are coming in. How are you balancing out the shows in terms of which audience to please? Like in your 80s show, does Open Sesame still have a home? Is Jungle Boogie and Funky Stuff still getting the same response? Is JT singing Funky Stuff in Jungle Boogie also, like with the band? Like
with Jungle Boogie, it was almost like we would all take a spot going,
okay.
You know, as long as we kept that going, you know, somebody, you know, get down with the boogie, that type of stuff. The same thing with Funky Stuff, you know. So that was a sing-along. So the whole band, so everybody sang, you know, with Funky Stuff. Jungle Boogie, just drop in, you know.
I see.
It's very easy that way. As well, it didn't make it like hard for anyone. You know, you just sang it.
I know that there was JT's exit in 88. He was just gone without any warning whatsoever.
I still don't understand that all these years.
What happened in 1988? Because you guys had this unbelievable streak, and then that's it. So what was the story of his exit and how?
I believe me, Quest. I was speaking about that last week.
Mm. Okay.
With I think it was my engineer, Wolfgang. No rhyme, no reason. It was just that he got a bunch of money from, I think it was A&M or MCA. And
MCA.
He went on to do his thing. And because when he first came out, I mean, he and I, we were roommates, you know, in all those hotels in the beginning. And not only roommates, we'd go out and hang out in the clubs together, come back and all the good stuff. So to this very day, I don't know. I really, really don't know. And I was searched. There was a time though, where I was saying, to let's call Ron Sweeney. Ron will call JT's manager and talk over things, and let's get JT back out on the road. You know, it would never move forward for some odd reason.
When do you remember the last time you had the conversation?
Oh, the last time we worked with Jay?
Well, he came back in the mid-90s, I believe, right?
He came back in the mid-90s, and then he left again.
Okay.
Whatever that was about. But when we got the Songwriters Hall of Fame, he came out. We straightened out the course because the band had the wrong changes.
right. Yeah,
funny that folks. He said, "No, it's this." And but he came out and sang, and it sounded like we never separated.
How did you guys come across, or how did you guys wind up enlisting the services of Skip Martin of the Daz Band? Yeah, the Daz Band to be JT's replacement in 88.
Well, Adele Bayan, peace and blessings be upon him. He passed away. Well, Adele, our manager, was in a tragic car accident, and he passed away. But he brings Skip over to my home. You know, Skip is a good singer, so it worked. What also worked was that he's a monstrous trumpet player. You know, yeah.
He is?
Oh, Skip?
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Skip is a monster.
Okay.
You can put up with Terrence Blanchard, and, you know, he's that guy. Miles, you know, and when he puts that mute on, he's great. So he added greatly to the horn front. Vocally, I know that different members in the band didn't. I know Cleese didn't like his vocals, that's for sure. and, yeah. You know, because it's too Vegas-y.
Right.
But we made it work. By the time we got Sean, who was close to JT vocally, Skip was just singing background and playing trumpet. But the horn section was extremely tight. You know, and Kalise loved Skip's horn, his trumpet playing as well. Loved it. And I do as well. You know, every time we have a session, even now if we're working for something, we call Skip, you know, Ravi Best, Skip, those guys. So Skip's tenure was rather short. Then we brought in Odeen Mays, who was a bass baritone, great pianist. So we had both Skip and Odeen Mays doing leads. The audiences loved it. Because you have the guy with that, like Blue Love It with that that voice,
right?
You know?
Yeah,
and then you got the that tenor, that Irish tenor that Skip has, you know, and then I don't know who it was, but Sean McQuilla. And when he came in, Sean has been with the band, God, now, I don't know, 30, 40 years. Maybe a little more. And his voice is very close to JT, but he has more of a rasp on it. So, yeah, good singer. And also a great guitar player, fabulous guitarist. You know, these days he can't pick up the guitar like he wants to, but as playing, he's great. You know, we have Rick Marcel out there as well. Also guitarist, bassist. Rick has played with Prince and Stephanie Mills, everybody's fabulous, you know. And Amir. Amir plays every instrument as well. It's crazy. Crazy good.
All right, y'all. You know what season it is. 'Tis the season for spring breaking and planning our summer travel. And if you're like me, you're already in your Airbnb app trying to find which spot is right for you. Now listen, while I'm looking to spend all this money, what I'm not doing is thinking about making money with Airbnb. See, you gotta change your mind state. Make the money while you're spending the money. How, you say, Laia, do I make the money? Well, you host at your house. And I know what you're thinking. I mean, my whole house? Well, no, you don't have to do your whole house. I mean, you could do a room or, you know, do the whole house. So make some money while you're spending some money this summer. I'm trying to tell you, your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome to 500 Greatest Songs, a podcast based on Rolling Stone's hugely popular, influential, and sometimes controversial list. I'm Brittany Spanos.
And I'm Rob Sheffield. We're here to shed light on the greatest songs ever made and discover what makes them so great.
Every week, we'll pick a new song from the list and talk about their placement on the revamped 2021 list.
We'll also have guests join us, ranging from the artists themselves to the producers, or simply other writers like ourselves who voted on them.
From classics like Fleetwood Mac's Dreams to the Ronettes' Be My Baby, and modern-day classics like The Killers' Mr. Brightside and Britney Spears' Baby One More Time.
There's so many fascinating stories that have been forgotten, like Midnight Train to Georgia starting with a phone call to Farrah Fawcett, or how the Yeah Yeah Yeahs inspired Kelly Clarkson's banger Since You've Been Gone and Beyoncé's Hold Up. Listen to Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, acclaimed comics writer and notorious Scott Summers hater, Rosie Knight.
Well, hello, Emmy-winning podcaster and totally unbiased Targaryen royal supporter, Jason Concepcion.
Rosie, somehow the X-Ray Vision podcast has returned. It feels so good.
It does. And like always, we'll be here every week covering the wide world of TV, movies, comics, and geek culture.
That's right. We'll be talking about Batman, heroes of that stature, and of course, we'll be inviting our friends in the industry to come geek out with us and share stories. We'll hear from TV writers, from actors, comics creators, pop culture critics, and more.
Nothing is off the table, because geek culture is pop culture, and we can't wait to share our love of it all with you every single week.
Listen to X-Ray Vision on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You mentioned something earlier, and it did hit me that I think in 2014 to 2015, my guitar player, Kirk, came up to me. He's like, man, you'll never guess where I was last night. And I was like, what? He's like, I was at a Van Halen show, and Cool and the Gang opened. You guys were touring with... What was that show like? Cool and the Gang and Van Halen.
Loud. We play loud. And they were loud. I mean, it was so loud that, especially during sound check, I'd go outside. You couldn't take it. You know, they were extremely loud. But Van Halen, great band, tight, great band, good guys, bunch of guys. You know, and here's
David is a major soul fan. That much I do know.
And the you know the forum here?
Yeah.
Well, it was kept on the QT, but that's where all the rehearsals were for the tour at the forum. You know. So we said we were saying ourselves, like, wow, what power you rent out the forum for rehearsal. Yeah. You know?
That's a flex.
Yeah, it's crazy.
That's a flex.
Don't forget to get George's book, Too Hot and Cool.
Yes. Can you talk about your memoir? Like, how long did it take you to write that?
Because I'm slow, it took about 10 years. And there's a lot of stuff that was taken out for political reasons, for whatever. Some of the stuff would be quite shocking. So he took it. I talked to Dave Smitherman when I was in D.C. So we just plucked stuff out. You know, some of the stuff that we alluded to about those guys, you know. And I never mentioned people's names.
Right.
The story would start and things. But if I mentioned their names and what I was involved with, and it was just, I was involved with one of their daughters.
Oh, this is a movie.
Yeah. This is a movie. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was like he was up here at a totem pole, not down here at the totem pole.
Oh,
yeah. So that was
Bronx Tale, Cool and the Gang. Yeah,
that was quite dangerous because she even said this is a little dangerous.
Lot of dangers.
They would, you'd be on the other side if my dad knew.
Yeah, could you tell me what your three favorite Kool & the Gang songs are. But can you also just tell me what was your favorite song to create?
Well,
wait, are you one of those? They're all my kids and I can't separate them.
No, I'm not one of those guys. And Peaceful from the Wild and Peaceful album.
Okay.
That the title song. I remember John Coltrane.
Okay. So I love that too. Wrote,
yeah, bo bo dee da da da. That and it's just really none of the hits. None of the
That's
big.
That's fine.
Like for us, those are the hits. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Little Children is one of my favorites of all
yeah,
time.
Yeah, all the little
right.
children.
Yeah, man. Mm.
You know,
don't change. And
the third would be
Fruit Man.
No, it's we got some rhythm songs in there. Caribbean Festival.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll take that.
It had all that looseness in it that you'd find in some of that. And so when you hear it, you go, oh, man, the horns, you know. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, it's that group. And you got that, you know, so it was great.
Okay. Know? So making those three like your favorite. Yeah, you know, as I said at the top of the show, man, it's really kind of our mission here on the show, just, you know, to give flowers to legendary people that otherwise might not get their just due as far as, you know, the legacy that they set forth. And definitely, you know, for all of us here, you know, Kool & the Gang represents, I mean, it's an institution of just brilliance and, you know, it's sustained all music, all times, you know, all spaces, and still strong to this day. I mean, even my band, you know, goes through a Kool & the Gang moment in our current show, and you know, the songs are.
Plus, you have a Jermaine Bryson.
Oh, tuba. Yeah, Jermaine. Yeah. Yes, I know that he plays with you guys. Yeah, Tuba's brother. Yeah,
he plays trombone.
Yeah, he plays. He plays with them now. Yeah. Yeah, man, but we just thank you for coming on the show, and we appreciate your, you know, your legacy and everything that you've done. And
straight up, thank you.
All your break beats and everything. we love that. We love it to death.
Thank you. I'm not going to say it's been a long, hard road. It's been a long, beautiful road to being as a creator, you know, because Ronald and I sit and come with materials. He and I, especially back in the late 70s and early 80s, that's what we did. We just sat in the studio and reversed things, put together live albums, you know, right. from all the tapes. You know the deal. And yeah. just had a ball. It'd be in there all night, 6 o'clock in the morning. You say, I'll see you in a few hours, come back again. And that whole set, that's worth everything. You know, as far as creative people is concerned, that's worth it all. You know, and it becoming successful too. And if it doesn't become successful, you go back and you tweet, "What did we do? What's going on?" Mm-hmm. So, well, and I appreciate you having me on as well.
Thank you for being here, man.
Thank you.
But it makes it just like all of us. It makes it a little harder, you know, when you go up here, I love your music, and then you gotta, mm-hmm. you know, that whole thing. The adoring, loving fans, but truly, truly heartfelt. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Yeah, and on behalf of Sugar Steve Fontigalo, I'm Pay Bill Laia, myself. This is Questlove Supreme. Shout out to Jake and Brittany. Thank you for holding it down, our family at iHeart. And we'll see y'all next week on the next go round of Questlove Supreme.
Hey, all boss, right? don't forget, brand new Kool & the Gang album in stores.
Why he's the minister of information in this band.
I'll take that.
All right. Next week, y'all. Thank you.
Hi, Jeff.
Thank you.
Blessings.
Questlove Supreme is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Welcome to 500 Greatest Songs, a podcast based on Rolling Stone's hugely popular, influential, and sometimes controversial list. I'm Brittany Spanos.
And I'm Rob Sheffield. We're here to shed light on the greatest songs ever made and discover what makes them so great.
From classics like Fleetwood Mac's Dreams to the Ronettes' Be My Baby, and modern day classics like The Killers' Mr. Brightside.
Listen to Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, acclaimed comics writer and notorious Scott Summers hater, Rosie Knight.
Well, hello, Emmy-winning podcaster and totally unbiased Targaryen royal supporter, Jason Concepcion.
Somehow the X-Ray Vision podcast has returned.
And like always, we'll be here every week.
You'll hear from TV writers, actors, comics creators, pop culture critics.
Nothing is off the table.
Listen to X-Ray Vision on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.